Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Trump administration is working to require scientists to disclose all of the raw data, including confidential medical records, before research findings can be considered in shaping regulations. Officials with the U.S. EPA say the proposal, titled Strengthening Transparency in Regulatory Science, would improve the ability to independently verify the findings. Scientists and physicians have pushed back, saying the proposed change would complicate a raft of existing rules and hinder efforts to enact new clean air and water rules, putting public health at risk. Lisa Friedman is a climate reporter for the New York Times. She's been covering the issue. Welcome, Lisa.
Thanks for having me.
The proposal, as I said, it's called Strengthening Transparency in Regulatory Science. Some researchers are calling it the secret science rule. What are they worried about?
So this rule is, as you say, one of the most controversial efforts that the EPA is taking up. Under a series of draft proposals that the EPA has come out with, they would require that scientists disclose all of the raw data, including, as you mentioned, confidential medical records, before the agency could consider using a given study in the course of developing regulation. So that has raised a number of really key concerns among scientists, and it has also raised concerns as well among people in public health and environmental organizations, that this is more of an effort to limit the amount of and the types of studies that can be relied upon to create regulation rather than a true transparency effort.
So the point being, it's an idea, it's an effort to curtail more regulation.
That is the argument that a number of groups have made, yes.
What is the argument by the EPA that this is necessary?
Sure. The Trump administration and I should say before the Trump administration took this up, this was a pet issue of a now former Congressman Lamar Smith from Texas, who claimed that there was not enough transparency in rulemaking. A lot of the concern raised by these lawmakers and now by the Trump EPA harkens back to a study done in the 1970s by Harvard University. It's the sort of famous shorthand is the Harvard Six Cities study that was a long-range study, and it definitively linked polluted air to premature deaths. That study has become foundational, and it is what the EPA has used in countless regulations to, among other things, show how much money, for example, would be saved in hospitalizations or avoided respiratory problems, avoided premature deaths in imposing stricter regulations on air pollution. The conservative groups have had a lot of concerns about this study for many years. It has been tested and retested. The results have come back the same time and time again. But the underlying concern about this study has always been that critics have not been able to see the raw data. And the reason for that is because it was gathered over many years, and it involved personal health data by people who signed confidentiality agreements in order to have their health studied over the years.
Seeing raw data, what does that entail? Does it have to include identifiable information about the people whose records were used for this?
Well, I mean, I think, it's a great question. And I think one of the many issues about this proposal is that it remains a little unclear just how raw data would be, what it means in the context of health studies. The Trump administration proposal would not use, there's concerns about whether people's names would be released. The Trump administration says that would not happen, but might data be turned over to the government? How would that then be safeguarded? There's myriad questions that underline this whole question of how raw is this data.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with climate reporter for the New York Times, Lisa Friedman, about a plan by the Trump administration to bar the U.S. EPA from making policy decisions based on research where the underlying data is not fully transparent. Coming up, we're going to hear from the Heritage Foundation, which supports this Trump proposal. We'll also hear from a scientist who warns that this so-called secret science rule could directly threaten children's health. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Lisa Friedman, is there evidence that's been cited that, for instance, the Harvard Six Cities study you said it's been, the data's been tested time and again. Mm-hmm. Is there any evidence that it's not accurate data?
No.
Is there any evidence that any of the studies that the EPA has used historically are not accurate?
No, and I think, the EPA has made the case that they are promoting transparency, that, that if they are going to make regulations that impose burdens on industry, potentially new onerous regulations on industry, that there should be maximum transparency, and that the data should be replicable, and that others should have the chance to, do the same studies if they wish to, based on that same data. So their argument is one of transparency.
Aren't the studies that are used by the EPA typically peer-reviewed as it is?
They are indeed. And, that is considered the gold standard.
Right.
So this is, this proposal is something that, dating back to the days in the early in the first year and a half of the Trump administration, was launched initially by then EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, mm-hmm. who really raised wars too strong, perhaps, but really raised questions time and again about peer-reviewed science. And I think that is something that we've seen a number of times from the administration, whether it is in regards to the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, scientists from more than 40 countries that contribute to our understanding of the science of climate change. Mm-hmm. And in other realms, there's a real effort, under this administration to call into question peer-reviewed science.
If hypothetically this proposal for this new proposed rule was adopted, and would it be retroactive?
That is an excellent question. The, you know, folks who have looked at the latest, it's all kinds of Washington jargon, forgive me for using this, but supplemental rule mm-hmm. that we obtained late last year, say that it certainly would. The administration denies that, and they said that it would not be be retroactive, but you know, the wording of what we saw last year certainly opened the door to it being retroactive.
And if it were enacted or adopted, it's not a law, it's a rule, but if mm-hmm. it were adopted by the Trump administration to make all this data transparent, could they legally do that? I mean, the research was, the data for the research was compiled with the understanding of anonymity, right? Wouldn't it be breaching some kind of contract somewhere down the line?
Right. So, I mean, a lot of questions in there. I mean, yeah. Would this face,
sorry,
okay. Would this face legal challenges? Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, so right now this is in the proposed rule stage. It received hundreds of thousands of objections from scientific groups all over the country. The administration took a sort of a pause. It then came out with an addition that in Washington parlance was a supplemental meant to address some of the concerns raised by the original proposal.
Uh-huh.
Scientists, you know, we obtained that. Scientists looked at that and said, this is worse than the first time around. And so now we're waiting for the final rule, which is expected to come out this year. Only after that can lawsuits begin. And, you know, it's been very clear from the beginning that this will indeed, you know, launch many, many legal challenges.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, pardon me. I know there were other parts to your question. But.
Well, that's okay. The supplemental draft that you talked about was sent to the Office of Management and Budget on November 8th. They had 90 days from then to complete that review. And that's when this public comment period occurred, right? And then there's another 30-day period for comment after that?
Actually, the next comment period will begin once a formal proposal is released. What we received was a leaked version. So it didn't set off an actual new comment period yet.
And if this did come to pass, if it does come to pass, and everything was made transparent, hypothetically, who would do what institution out there would have the facilities to challenge the research? It's certainly not the EPA. They're not funded to test their own. I mean, I don't know. You cover them. What are they able to even do that? Who would be?
Yeah. So, I mean, this would it would create a whole new system. So the Office of Management and Budget estimated that complying with this transparency rule would initially cost about $250 million, and then between $1 million and $100 million a year. And that would be, you know, for the cost of the government validating, doing independent validation and replication of the research. You know, now getting back to the question of personal health records. I mean, yes, when patients participate in health studies, their medical records are typically kept anonymous. You know, the administration said, you know, whatever rule they come out with will comply with HIPAA rules. But, you know, at this point, the devil is in the details.
Well, Lisa Friedman, I got to let you go, but I certainly do appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That's Lisa Friedman. She's a climate reporter for The New York Times. She has been covering the issue of a proposal put forth by the Trump administration. It's called Strengthening Transparency and Regulatory Science. Some researchers are calling it the secret science rule. We're going to hear from the Heritage Foundation later on in the program. That's a conservative think tank that supports this effort to make transparent the underlying data in research that the U.S. EPA uses to create regulations. Coming up, we're going to hear from an earth sciences professor and director of the Center for Urban Health at Indiana University, Purdue University in Indianapolis, about why he thinks this could harm public health going forward, especially child public health. So stay with us. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Trump administration has proposed a plan to bar the Environmental Protection Agency from making policy decisions based on research with underlying data that isn't fully transparent, including confidential medical records. Researchers have warned that the change could endanger public health, especially for children. Gabriel Filippelli is a professor of earth sciences and director of the Center for Urban Health at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. Welcome to the show, Gabe.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote an article warning that the EPA's quote-unquote secret science rule directly threatens children's health. First of all, talk about what you mean by secret science.
Well, I see it as a way to continue to remove scientists from the process of informing the administration, whether that's EPA or other organizations, about true cutting-edge research. And in a sense, I see it as a way to stifle open science by way of promoting more corporate oversight into environmental regulations, which is pretty much backwards of how we should be protecting the environment.
Wouldn't the corporate studies that are used have to be transparent as well?
They certainly would, but the corporate studies are almost exclusively the medical drug discovery kinds of things, supported work. I work on the environmental side of things, and in that sense, it's taken tremendous effort by environmental scientists to discover and sort of unearth these new environmental threats that we're finding. It's not the corporate interests who are leading the way in, for example, finding that we have Teflon in most of our water supplies in this country, or that we have persistent lead poisoning, my own area of research, in most of the cities in this country. It's basically the frontline scientists, environmental health scientists, who are making these discoveries.
Why are children especially at risk under this proposal?
Well, I view it as the lens of my own research, right? Children are vulnerable to particularly environmental exposures for a number of reasons. Largely, they eat more, breathe more, and drink more than an adult of their same size, comparable size, and they're developing. So a lot of the environmental exposure issues that I work with, and a lot of my colleagues work with, are toxins that actually infect and affect the neurology, their neurological development of children. And once you affect that, they're basically poisoned for life.
Walk me through the process of gathering data for research, for the kind of research we're talking about, and what it is that you think should be remain cloaked. Should remain private.
Sure, and I'll use my own research as an example. So I had been focusing a lot on cities, particularly Indianapolis and other cities, looking at the amount of what we call legacy contaminants in soil. So any city has, especially older ones like Columbus would too, has a long history of industrialization, a lot of traffic, a lot of old buildings, a lot of things that were built and were infrastructure before we had environmental regulations to remove, for example, lead, the heavy metal lead from gasoline and from paint and from emission sources. So in my research, we found that there's a significant amount of lead, this legacy lead, in soils all around these neighborhoods in the near downtown area of Indianapolis, as well as some of the other cities we've looked at. And so we have posed the question, is this still causing health impacts? So to do that, we couldn't rely on the normal health data that was available for children's blood lead poisoning levels because it was too gross a scale. So we couldn't actually identify what particular neighborhoods were the biggest concerns. So to do that, we wrote a proposal and were able to mine about 16,000 data samples for blood lead results for about a decade here in Indianapolis and map the distribution of poison kids effectively. So the part of that data that is not publicly available is the kids' street home addresses. And those are covered by a variety of regulations. So I'm responsible for protecting the home addresses. The reason I needed to know the home addresses and the age of the children are to be able to do these neighborhood scale maps of poisoning so that we can figure out what are the areas where kids are getting most damage and how can we link that to the source of that damage, which ultimately is this legacy lead.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Gabe Filippelli. He's an earth sciences professor and director of the Center for Urban Health at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. And we're talking about a Trump administration proposal to bar the U.S. EPA from making policy decisions based on research with underlying data that isn't fully transparent. And Gabe Filippelli is just describing, you know, what sort of data we're talking about and why it is not fully transparent. It could include confidential medical records, but in this case, it's something as prosaic as the street addresses that he uses to map where lead, is that right, Gabe? Lead has affected children. So if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I guess the mapping thing, you know, the mapping sort of research that you do is absolutely relies then on things like addresses. Isn't there a way to redact information so that you can still get the mapping of it without revealing identities?
So not really. And so when, for example, I publish the data, and so when I submit a paper or my findings for review, as I've done with countless papers that mm-hmm. deal with this kind of data, I do have to aggregate that data to a larger spatial scale, meaning that I have to take those individual addresses and make an average of the addresses at a zip code level, if you want to think of it that way. Okay. I actually do it at a finer scale. But so at that scale, nobody can figure out who lives at what house and who is poisoned and who is not, mm-hmm. right? The problem is that you can't actually do the root analysis, so the source identification, unless you have that that street address level data. And so that's what a lot of our most important discoveries have been because we have that. We've, for example, been able to identify that the old source that many people talk about, you know, kids eating lead-based paints as the main exposure, mm-hmm. that doesn't happen very much anymore. It's largely soil and the dust that's generated from that soil in these small neighborhoods that are causing most of that exposure. And we were only able to discover that because we had the data down at the street address level. And so this becomes a real conundrum, right? Like our work, which has informed EPA policy, can actually not be used by the EPA anymore unless we put it in some other system, which is likely going to be causing a tremendous amount of extra effort and work by all parties involved.
When you get access to those addresses, what kind of agreement do you have with the providers of the data?
Yeah, so I have to first be approved by a review board, which looks at these data, it looks at these requests very carefully, because their job is to make sure that first subjects aren't harmed. Uh-huh. In this case, I'm looking at blood data that's already taken, so that's not an issue of the harm. But the other task is to make sure that that individuals are not identifiable. So you can't link a health record to a person. And so in order, so obviously I have to get data at that address level, and I guarantee the review board that I have my own guarantees in place to make sure that data is never released. And so I have to document that I have a secure server that's underneath, behind what's called the university firewall, so no one else can get it. I have to document that immediately upon receiving the data, I have a version of it that I have anonymized, so kind of randomized for further analysis, even though I have the street-level address in another file. Uh-huh. I have to ensure that I never publish any of the information that could be identifiable or discuss individual cases. So there's a whole level of safeguards, which are really, really important, and which are already a pretty onerous task, obviously, to make sure that you abide by these rules.
What is a peer review? What does that amount to?
So a peer review is when you publish, when you produce a report based on findings and you submit it for possible publication in journals. Journals don't just publish things. I'm the editor-in-chief of a journal called GeoHealth, for example. And mm-hmm. what we do is we receive papers and we make sure to distribute it to expert reviewers in the field who will be able to analyze the credibility of this, what are the weaknesses, and how the papers could be approved through the process. So it's actually quite a vigorous process. You can't just, it's not like dumping something on the internet. In fact, it's vetted by a number of steps, including expert external reviewers and editors. Now, there is an occasion where we allow external reviewers to see source data, but that also has to be approved after the fact, or before the fact, with university officials. So typically, even reviewers get data that is aggregated so that at least so that they cannot identify the individuals involved.
And isn't everything that goes before the EPA or anything that the EPA would use, isn't that already peer-reviewed?
Everything that the EPA has used of mine and other people's have already been peer-reviewed. And I am sympathetic to one issue. As an editor myself, people have to be able to reproduce studies. They have to be able to see the validity of analyses. So you have to balance that against the very real need to protect the identity of individuals that are involved in this study. So what most of our journals have done is had a sort of this happy medium, which is that we trust the researchers to have the source data and have done the source analysis, mm-hmm. but we rigorously analyze basically everything that happens after that. Or in other words, as they are doing the statistical work and so forth, we rigorously analyze that through the review process to make sure there are no flaws. And eventually, if it's good enough, it gets published, and it can then inform EPA policy.
Now, when I was talking to Lisa Friedman from the New York Times, she said that all things being equal, it's more than likely that if and when this rule change is adopted, it'll all be wrapped up in lawsuits for who knows how long anyway. But what is your sense about what the impact would be on ongoing research and on future research?
Well, yeah, excellent question. I think what this would end up doing is we would all have to be prepared for an eventuality where it might be passed, right? And so even during this time when it's locked up in lawsuits and so forth, we're preparing. And what we're preparing is trying to figure out some system, some agreement between universities, review boards, individual researchers like myself, and the federal government about how you're going to handle this very, very sensitive data. And how you're going to get approvals to do that. What it means for me personally is that if you think about it, a lot of my work has already been published on this topic. So if that is going to inform future policy, I assume that then I will have to go back to the original source files and back to my review board to ask for additional approvals for whatever system they might come up with. And that that puts all of the onus on the individual researcher. And that's why we're saying sort of secret science. It's the more of this administrative issues that you pile on researchers who are already completely overwhelmed with what they're doing now, the more you pile on researchers, the less likely they are to engage in this kind of research.
And to what extent do you understand that the EPA is funded to review your research as it is?
My understanding, and I've been involved in one of the EPA reviews of the recent review for the for how much lead is allowable in air, and that's part of the Clean Air Act. Mm-hmm. So the EPA, the EPA uses peer-reviewed research as the underpinning of all the policy that they do. So they, in my opinion, in my interactions with EPA scientists, they see absolutely no problem with how they are doing this analysis now. They look at peer-reviewed literature. They periodically bring in researchers like myself, experts in the field, to discuss the body of literature out there and to inform them about whether they want to change the a rule or not. So that's a system we currently have in place. It's very vigorous, and it costs money already, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they have to bring in these researchers. They have their own staff who are doing this policy. And so it's already a careful and deliberative process. I just see this as a further way to remove science and scientists from this very important regulation.
Well, once you remove science and scientists from the deliberations over rulemaking when it comes to environmental protection issues, what's left?
Well, exactly. What's left is people, for example, I mean, this is cynical, but what's left are the polluters who want more relaxed regulation.
But wouldn't they have to prove to relax the regulation? Wouldn't they have to do their own research? And wouldn't that have to be as public and visible as what they're proposing in this rule?
In a sense, no, because if something's not bad until it's proven to be bad, right? Mm-hmm. So the default is it's very opposite of the normal protection. We usually say no to something until we prove it's okay. Well, in environmental protection, you have to prove that something is causing harm before any action has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So if no one is there proving that, let's say, Teflon and these PFAS chemicals or lead is causing harm, then they can just keep emitting it.
You know, you mentioned the forever chemicals early on in our conversation, and, you know, the Dark Waters, the movie is out now. Rob Bellat's book is out about it. He's the lawyer, obviously, that uncovered the Teflon forever chemicals issue down in Parkersburg. That was a big study of, you know, they said it was the biggest epidemiological study ever because they drew the blood of all those people down there. But those people, their identities are protected, right?
That's right.
And that wouldn't be the case anymore.
That's exactly right. Depending on how you handle the data, it's certainly not protected from scrutiny at the, for example, by EPA. What I'm worried about is that now it's not only has to be publicly available, you know, obviously we keep something confidential, but the, you know, industry reps will now have access to this, not just the EPA, but, you know, other organizations who are part of these now science panels. And it's really troubling because unless you to move forward in some of these areas, we need this trust, and we don't believe people should just trust us because we're scientists, but we have protections in place.
Gabriel Filippelli, thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you covering this. Thanks very much.
That's Gabriel Filippelli. He's an earth sciences professor and director of the Center for Urban Health at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. Coming up, we're going to hear from the Heritage Foundation about why they support this proposed rule change by the Trump administration to bar the U.S. EPA from making policy decisions based on research with underlying data that isn't fully transparent, including confidential medical records. So if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. We're talking about a proposal pending with the U.S. EPA that would require underlying data in environmental research to be fully transparent. Scientists warn that the policy could negatively impact public health research, which relies heavily on private medical records. Trump administration proponents of the change say that the transparency is worth the risk. Darren Baxt is the Senior Research Fellow in Agricultural Policy at the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank that supports the proposed change. Welcome to the show, Darren.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You write that the proposed EPA rule shouldn't be controversial and that important scientific data should be made available to the public. What is the evidence that the existing research that the EPA has used since its founding in the 70s, back during the Nixon administration, where's the evidence that this has been a problem?
Well, there's, you know, one of the underlying problems is we don't have access to the underlying data, so people cannot properly evaluate it. And what exists just in science generally is there's all kinds of peer review crisis going on. There's a reproducibility crisis going on, so scientists can't even duplicate the work of other scientists or even their own work. So a 2016 Nature survey found that about 52% of researchers thought there was a significant crisis of reproducibility. Only 3% said there was no crisis. So you don't even know. There's no way to evaluate the science. And the the concept of transparency is something that's got bipartisan support. It's something that by its nature shouldn't be controversial. In 2009, President Obama issued a memorandum where he was trying to improve the integrity of the science and create greater faith in agency science. The way to do that is through greater transparency. And I should point out that there's, I think a lot of misleading information about this proposed rule. There's nothing in the rule that would in any way compel the disclosure of private information that would violate, existing obligations. In fact, the proposed rule language expressly says nothing in the rule compels the disclosure of any confidential or private information that violates applicable legal and ethical protection.
Then what is it that they're not able to get?
But, it's a million-dollar question as to what the big concern is here. What would happen is there's no question that existing science that a lot of folks who like certain policy outcomes, it is possible that some of that science may have to be reviewed and to ensure that it is, in fact, the best available science. It would be a chance for other people to not simply just assume we can trust the agency to just do whatever it is they've been doing, and it will be kind of subject to the review of other experts.
Why not trust the agency?
Well, I think it's important to understand that, first of all, I always like to take a step back here.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, first of all, we're talking about the agency developing laws here and impact the lives of all Americans. And when we think about who makes laws, we think of Congress passing laws because they have the lawmaking power under the Constitution. And there's all kinds of obstacles put in the place for Congress to actually pass laws. There's the House and the Senate. And you have to get votes. And the voters can't vote you out. So there's accountability for the legislators. And the president can veto the law. There's all kinds of checks. But when it comes to the agency, where are the checks? And when the agencies are developing laws that can impact America.
Well, they're rules. They're not laws, for one thing. But it happens at the state level as well. Laws
sure.
are passed, and then there's there's agencies on rule review, and then they have to make up the rules to put a law into effect. They don't get down into that kind of minutiae and the rules that are guided by the laws, right? I mean, what would you propose as an alternative that the U.S. EPA not have the freedom to establish rules regarding environmental health?
No.
Okay.
That's not what I'm saying. You're right, it's called rules. But rules, regulations are, in fact, have legal effect. So they definitely impact the rights of Americans.
Yes.
And restrict the ability to do things or not do things. And there's a whole question to what extent Congress delegates too much power to the agencies, and so much so than the fact that they're giving away their lawmaking power. But that kind of gets into a deeper question. The concept of the public participation in the rulemaking process is not new. This has been around in 1946 is the passage of the Administrative Procedure Act, which is designed to ensure that the public has the right to know what the agencies are doing and to participate and to basically create transparency. So this is, you know, what is it, 80 years or so? So it's not like a novel concept to say the government and the public should be involved in providing a check on the agencies. So when the agencies are developing policies, it's important to know how they are, in fact, you know, making those decisions and what kind of science they're using to make those decisions. That's all this is, all that's being proposed.
I'm still wondering, well, all right, so I talked to Gabriel Filippelli, who's done research on lead and the impact on children, and his research includes the addresses. I mean, I kind of visualize it at going down to a precinct level, addresses, literally street addresses of children, and to map where lead is a problem in Indianapolis, that they went through a lot of hoops to guarantee that those addresses would not be made public to protect the identities of the children. What impact is it, your opinion, that this proposed rule would have on those kinds of promises made in the past on research that has been groundbreaking and is foundational?
So a couple things. One, nothing impacts the science that your previous guest was discussing, in the sense of, you know, there's two questions. One is the science and how the scientific community kind of regulates itself and ensures certain protections. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the science should be used in policymaking. There are certain protections that are consistent with the principles of this country and accountability that once you start to develop actual use of studies for policy, then there might be additional protections in place or different requirements that the science would have to go through. So it shouldn't be thought of the EPA is not developing standards to kind of regulate a scientific community. They're developing standards to regulate how policy is developed by the EPA. And what I was explaining before was that there's nothing in the proposed rule that would violate existing obligations or legal obligations. So in that situation, existing protections would still be in place. Kind of these extreme situations are being brought out as kind of opposition to this general notion of greater transparency. And there might be some privacy concerns and confidential business information concerns, but that shouldn't be an excuse not to promote transparency. There might be some obstacles, but there are solutions. And to the extent that there are not solutions or ways to work around it, then nobody is suggesting that you therefore violate that confidentiality.
Are you saying that if they couldn't get permission to use those street addresses of the children involved in that study, that there's nothing in the proposed rules that would force them to do it?
There's nothing, as I said, the rule does not compel the disclosure of information that's already protected by the law.
So it's not retroactive.
Well, no, it's not retroactive in that sense, in terms of the privacy. I don't know to what extent this might change how scientists, how that will adjust the privacy issues moving forward. I mean, you're still going to have protections in place, but it's something to bear. Look, it's not always about some solutions, for example, is not necessarily having the public having full access. There might be ways of addressing situations where you allow other, like certain experts and scientists, to have access to the information, assuming they sign agreements to ensure they don't disclose the information.
Okay.
Those are things that I'm sure that your other guest has probably dealt with.
So that they can check it and peer review it and that kind of a thing.
Right.
Would you, I mean, is it something that you is desirable to you is having the U.S. EPA funded to the extent that it can do its own research?
No, it doesn't have to do that. In fact, the use of the outside science is fine. You know what, I would certainly hope that they continue to use outside science, but that doesn't mean that there's no way to know something is the best available science unless we can actually evaluate whether or not something is the best available science. There are significant problems with, like I said, peer review processes. There are scientists that are forging results. The entire integrity, that this is just in the scientific community. So why wouldn't the agency want to make sure that those types of unethical behavior and misleading information and inaccurate information is not pervading the policymaking process? Because we're not simply developing a study.
Uh-huh.
We're developing a policy
right.
that's actually going to have an impact on the lives of Americans.
Who do you what do you envision would be using this currently opaque data? If it were to be made transparent, who would be doing those reviews? It'd be the same kind of situation as the existing peer review processes, except that you would have access to that raw data.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't just have an agency peer review process. You would allow outside experts through. Yeah, you allow other outside experts to be able to have access to the data. There's a lot of studies that the EPA has, and those researchers that simply will not disclose information to other people. And there's just no way to know whether or not what the studies are is, in fact, made up, flawed. And we're drawing major public policy based on some studies that have not been properly evaluated and not vetted. And all the EPA is saying is actually kind of adopting similar policies that a lot of academic journals are trying to adopt, which is to ensure that the science and the underlying studies can be validated by outside experts. That's really the goal here. We just want to make sure that what the science is being used is actually legitimate and that the public can have faith in the system.
It is going to require significant funding, according to journalists and critics of it, for sure, $250 million at the outset to change this process and adopt this rule. What are your thoughts about the cost? Is it worth it?
I think that estimate is probably high.
What do you estimate?
Well, I've seen other estimates are significantly lower. Mm-hmm. And honestly, if it did cost $100 million or whatever it might cost. First of all, we're not always talking about the reproducibility that the agency itself has to make it reproducible, and it does. And there are ways to kind of narrow down potentially the studies that have to be made available. It's not necessarily every single study.
Uh-huh.
It might be the studies that the agency has relied upon. Just as the agency, in the proposed rule, calls it pivotal regulatory science. So it's kind of specific studies. So the cost estimate itself, to me, is questionable.
Hmm.
But even so, yes, I think ultimately it should be a transparent system. And if there are certain costs that are involved, obviously depending on the cost, then it needs to be done. We certainly don't want to continue to develop policy where it's costing billions and billions of dollars to the public and then simply not have any idea whether or not it's actually justified. That's a much greater cost than any cost of simply taking the precautionary steps now. Plus, I should point out that once you actually do the initial cost of evaluating the science, the cost will come way down eventually, because you will have already done those reviews.
Darren Baxt, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Darren Baxt is a senior research fellow in agricultural policy at the Rowe Institute for Economic Policy Studies at the Heritage Foundation, which supports plans by the EPA to make sure that important scientific data is transparent to the public. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.